TheYeshiva.net.
Today's class is dedicated by Nessa Goldschmidt and her family, Beth and her husband, Lawrence Goldschmidt, in honor and in tribute and in loving memory of Nessa's mother, Alta Chaya Charna Rivka Bas Reb Meir Chanoich, in tribute to the Yahrzeit of Tess Tavis, dedicated by her beloved daughter, Nessa Goldschmidt. Thank you very, very much. May your mother remain an everlasting source of light, blessing, and inspiration to you and the whole family and all of the Jewish people. Also dedicated by Rabbi Yisrael Yitzchak HaKayan Kaplan, wishing Chani and Chana Gwertz a big mazel tov on their son Meir's wedding to Dini Mermelstein. May it be a binyan, a day ad, and a beautiful and blessed life. And their son Shmuel Binyamin's bar mitzvah, and Chana's birthday, La'arichas Yamin v'shanam tovus. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Thank you so much. I want to address with you today a pasuk in Parshas Vayechi, a verse in Vayechi. At the surface, it just looks like a nice compliment, words of praise. But when we go a little bit deeper, we see an entire world, and really worlds, unraveling here. I would say that one of the most fascinating things in learning Torah is to see how sometimes a few cryptic and seemingly irrelevant words contain within themselves layers of extraordinary depth and wisdom and perspective. Another fascinating thing is that sometimes a concrete and simple law, halacha, that seems very technical and tedious, mirrors a very profound and profound ideas in life. An example of these truths we'll see today in this pasuk. In Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov Avinu bids farewell to his family. A life, 147 years, intense, loaded, filled with vicissitudes from one extreme to another extreme, saturated with trial and tribulations and journeys, both physically and emotionally and spiritually. It's time for Yaakov to say goodbye. And the Torah describes how he summons all of his children. And he says, gather here, I want to tell you what's going to happen at the end of days. And then he addresses each of the Shvatim, each of his 12 sons, individually, describing their characters, their flaws, their strengths, their challenges, their opportunities and blessings, and their destiny. He also gives everyone a special blessing and words that will be relevant to their future journey and vocation, both for them and their descendants throughout history. Then he comes to Yosef. Yosef, his beloved son, the oldest son, of course, of Rachel, who has been through so much himself and is now the prime minister of Egypt. These are his words to Yosef. Very fascinating words. It's Parshas Vayechi, Perik Mem Tes, Pasuk Chav Beis, which would be Genesis chapter 49, verse 22. And you have it in your source sheets, the first one. These are Yaakov's words to Yosef. Ben Pyrus Yosef. Ben Pyrus Ale Oyin. Bonois Tzada Ale Shur. Vayemararuhu Varoibu Vayistamuhu Baale Chitzim. These are the two psukim Chav Beis and Chav Gimel. What does this mean? So the English translation, which has every translation, even when a translator tries to do the best job and they really are earnest, but by definition, it's not the fault of the translator, by definition, translations, especially of the Torah texts, are always impoverished, because a translation by definition has to zoom into one meaning and leave it by that. And this will be a good example. What is Yaakov saying? This is very eloquent and very rich and sophisticated Lashon Kodesh, Hebrew. What is he saying? So the translation is, he's turning to his son and saying, a charming son is Yosef. A son charming to the eye. Pyrus is translated here as charming, graceful. And he says again, Ben Pyrus Ale Ayin. He's charming to whom? Charming to the eye. Literally, when the eye sees Yosef, when the eyes behold Yosef, they're filled with some form of pleasure or delight. There's something very special that happens when you look at Yosef. He's charming to the eye. Alei ayin, like el ayin, to the eye. And then Yaakov continues. Banois tzada alei shur. The women, the girls, banois, the young women, tzada, they strode or they marched, a parade in today's Hebrew is called mitzad. Tzad achar tzad. Tzad means a step. So these girls strode, tzada, they walked, they paraded, or they marched, or they strode, alei shur, in order to see him. What does this mean? We'll see in a moment. Vayimaru, his life was made bitter. They, he doesn't say who they, but they made his life bitter. Vayroibu, from the word meriva, they quarreled with him, they fought with him. Vayistamuhu balei chitzim, archers despised him and loathed him. Chitzim comes from the word chetz. Chetz means an arrow. So those who shoot arrows, vayistamu, they hated him. What does all of this mean? So Rashi, as usual, comes to the rescue. Rashi says, Ben Pyrus alei ayin, chenoi notui al ha'ayin haroya oisai. His charm attracts the eye that beholds him. There is a chen, we call chen charm or grace or delight, a special halo that engulfs a person. So this chen is natui, it attracts any eye that looks at Yosef, is enthralled, is consumed, is overwhelmed from a sweet feeling, from a graceful feeling. What's b'nai sa'ad alei shur? So Rashi says, b'nai smitzrayim ayut sa'adais alachayim alistakal b'yofya. The girls, the women of Egypt, strode out on the walls to gaze upon his beauty. So Yaakov Banois, the girls, Sada, they strode, they walked, Alei Shur, on the walls of Mitzrayim, where they walked, they went on the walls. It says when Yosef became prime minister of Egypt, so there was like a ticker day parade. Yaakov, Pare had him go all over Egypt, in the Merkevis HaMishnah, the special chariot, the coach that was reserved for the prime minister, for the viceroy of Egypt. And Rashi says everybody wanted to see him. So that's what Yaakov is talking about. The girls went onto the walls to be able to behold Yosef. It's interesting. Banois is plural. Many girls. Tzada is singular. She. So Rashi says, yes, because of the woman, each one strode to a place from which she could catch a glimpse. So Banais, there were many young women, many girls, many women, saw them, each one found a place. Alei shur, shur means to see in Hebrew, to be able to catch a glimpse of Yosef. This is how charming this young man was. And then Yaakov continues right away, but he was hated. They quarreled with him, and the archers loathed him and hated him. This is how Rashi explains the pasuk. Now, the obvious question is, why did Yaakov choose this quality and this story to describe literally moments before he passed away? We all know how deep the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef was. Now Yaakov is about to say goodbye to all of his children, including to Yosef. How does he start off? These are the words. These are the words he decides to talk about, literally to bid farewell to Yosef. And what this means is that Yaakov felt at this moment the most important thing to talk about is Yosef's charm, Yosef's beauty, and not just internally for himself, but the way he is perceived by others. And then, from all examples, you could say, okay, he's a beautiful, beautiful man. We already know that Yosef was beautiful. The Torah clearly says Yosef was Yifei Tayar, for Yifei Mara. In fact, it's very unique that the Torah should describe a man in those terms. Usually, the term Yifei Tayar for Yifei Mara in Bereishis is reserved for the matriarchs, but it's reserved also for Yosef. And that gives us context to what happens afterwards in the story with the wife of Potiphar, who takes a liking to him and so forth. But Yaakov wants to focus on this. And if it's not enough, he has to tell it through a story. What's the story? That the girls in Egypt went on a wall, they climbed up on a wall to look at Yosef. And these are his parting words to his son. So the fact that Yosef's beauty was dazzling, Yaakov feels the need to illustrate it, and who will prove it? The women living in Egypt. Why does Yaakov feel that this detail, this story, first of all, is relevant, and when? Literally on his deathbed. So at the surface, you could say, well, he's just giving an example. You know, everyone was enthralled by you, and in Egypt, everybody was enthralled by you. But what is really the depth that Yaakov is trying to convey? Why is it so important for Yosef and everybody else standing there to understand this, to know this? Okay, we'll get back to this. And we'll see how this pasuk became a source of a major halacha in Jewish law. You would think, what's this connected to halacha? It's just a story about Yosef's beauty. But we'll see how in Jewish history this innocent verse about Yosef's dazzling appearance becomes a source for a fascinating law, and halacha will soon get back to it. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, I'm changing the subject now a little bit, in your next source, the third source, a pasuk in Tehillim, Kapitel Pei, we just said it a few minutes ago, Roye Yisrael ha'azina, noye katzayin Yosef, Yosef ha'kruvim ha'fiyah. The shepherd of Israel, the shepherd of Yisrael, listen to us. The one who leads Yosef like the flock, the shepherd of the flock who leads Yosef like the flock, the one who sits on the kruvim, on the chariots, please appear. So Rashi says, Kol Yisrael nikrayim al shem Yosef, lufishu pirnesam v'chilkalam b'meharav. Yosef is actually a name that describes the Jewish people. When it says Hashem leads Yosef like a shepherd leads the flock, he's referring to the Jewish people. Why are they called Yosef? We're called Yisrael. We're the children of Yisrael. We're not all the children of Yosef. There was one tribe of Yosef. And then it was split into Ephraim and Manasseh. Why are we all called Yosef? We're not all called Reuven. We're not all called Shimon. We're not all called Levi. There's a group of Jews called Leviim or Kohanim. And the answer is, Rashi says, because Yosef sustained the Jewish people in the times of hunger. And that's why forever, one of the names of the Jewish people is Yosef. So when the Tehillim says, Noye Katzayin Yosef, Hashem leads Yosef like you lead, like a shepherd leads the flock. Yosef here is a name for the Jewish people. But it's a little strange. What happened in Egypt was that for a few years, Yosef sustained them. And that's why forever, we all carry the name Yosef. First of all, even then, if somebody feeds me, I'm thankful to them, I'm grateful to them, I owe them certainly a depth of gratitude, a debt of gratitude. And a very profound one. But why does my name become that person's name? Especially the Tehillim was written so many such centuries and generations later. Till then, they're all called Yosef. Why? Because he sustained them in the times of hunger. Obviously, what this is teaching us is that when Yosef sustained the Jewish people in hunger, it wasn't just a physical story that happened a few years. It rather was also a story that is timeless because Yosef gave the Jewish people a gift. He bequeathed it to them. He gave them a piece of himself. Hunger exists on a physical level, of course. There's also a different form of hunger. There is an emotional hunger. There's spiritual starvation. There's different forms of starvation. And Yosef gave a gift, an eternal gift to the Jewish people that even generations later, we still carry that name Yosef because there was something of himself that he bequeathed, that he infused in every Jewish soul, whether you come from his shevet, from his tribe or not. And that's why we all carry that name. There's a piece of us that's called Yosef that we need when we need to sustain ourselves during hunger. When a person is starving, is thirsty, on different levels, there is a piece that we can be nourished by, nurtured by. And that piece is called Yosef. But what is that? Yosef, the name. He's the one who sustained them. Yosef, like Rashi says, take a look in Rashi. Yosef pirnisam v'chilkalam b'meharav. Okay, so now we need a little piece of Jewish history. When the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, it was, after, of course, 40 years after they left Egypt. They wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, and then they came into Eretz Yisrael under the leadership of Joshua of Yeshua ben Nun. It took 440 years until Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash. That's a long time. 4.5 centuries, 440 years. He put up the first Beis HaMikdash 480 years after they left Egypt, 440 years after they entered into Eretz Yisrael. What did the Jewish people have during all those years from coming into Eretz Yisrael until there was a Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim? So most of those years they had a Mishkan. They had a sanctuary. This was located in a place called Shiloh. If you go today to Shiloh, they have excavations and archaeological findings located in the ancient Shiloh, and even some proofs of parts of Shiloh, of literally the ancient Jewish world when they came into Eretz Yisrael, and there the Mishkan stood for 369 years. Shin Samachta. So most of the time, from coming into Eretz Yisrael until the first Beis HaMikdash was put up in Yerushalayim on the Har HaBayis by David HaMelech, and then completed by Shlomo HaMelech, David prepared the foundations, and then Shlomo actually built it and dedicated it. So for most of that time, the Mishkan was situated in Shiloh. So this was the place the Jewish people would go to worship. This was the epicenter of the Jewish life. This was the place, of course, they went to bring karbanos. This was the place they made Aliyah L'Regel. They went Pesach, Shavuah, Sukkos. It was Shiloh. Shiloh is in the territory of Yosef. The territory of Yosef included the city called Shiloh. Yerushalayim, where the Beis HaMikdash was, is primarily the territory of Binyamin and Yehuda. Binyamin and Yehuda were neighbors. So Yehuda and Binyamin. Part of the Mizbeach was in Binyamin. So you know how to put it on vibrate. You know how to put it on off. Need the children for this. Yehuda, so the Beis HaMikdash. It's nice music. You know how to turn it off. Thank you. So Shiloh was in the territory of Yosef, and the Beis HaMikdash, and Yerushalayim, part of it was in the territory of Yehuda. So 369 years, it's in Shiloh. It's interesting. Shiloh had the Mishkan that Moshe Rabbeinu built in the desert. It was brought to Eretz Yisrael, and it was put up. The difference is that it had walls, actually. In the Mishkan, it was beams made of Atzei Shittim, Pimsenholz, Atzei Shittim, acacia wood, or cedar wood. The Shiloh had actually walls, but the roof was still the Yerios, the tapestries that was built in the original Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it was transferred 40 years in the desert. They brought it into Eretz Yisrael, and this Mishkan had a few different locations. It was in a place called Gilgal and Noiv and Givon, but primarily it was in Shiloh, as I said, for 369 years. Now, one more interesting detail, and then it was destroyed by the Philistines. The Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed by the Philistines. And the Plishtim, and ultimately they needed a new place. And Shiloh was destroyed by the Philistines. The Mishkan itself wasn't destroyed. And ultimately they traveled again until David HaMelech settled in Yerushalayim. There's a very interesting halacha about Mishkan Shiloh, a very interesting law. What is that? Generally, when a Jew brought a carbon, let's take the Carbon Pesach. Carbon Pesach was a Passover offering that was eaten by every Jewish family, men, women, children. But like every other carbon, the food was holy. The meat was sacred. It could not be brought out of Yerushalayim. If you took the meat of an offering that was brought into Beis HaMikdash and you took it out of Yerushalayim, it had to be burnt. And the reason is because Yerushalayim has an energy. There's a holiness there. And if it's taken out of that, it's very sensitive. And if it's taken out of that, it affects it. Just like you have sometimes a person has a certain condition, and they have to be protected. They can't be in other places because the germs, God forbid, if somebody's immune system is weak, they have to be very careful where they go, what environment they're in, what type of germs or bacteria or infections may be there, what type of air they're absorbing into their body. Why? Because you have to know your sensitivities. The same is true on an emotional level and a spiritual level. You all know sometimes you go to a place and it's not good. You come home and you're exhausted for 3.5 weeks or at least 3.5 hours. It's true on every level. The meat of the carbon is sacred. It's divine. It has to, in order for it to be what it's supposed to be, it has to be eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. There were karbanos called kotche kadashim and karbanos called kotchem kalim. We say it in the morning before davening. Kotche kadashim means the holy of the holies. They had to be eaten in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara, in the confines of the Beis HaMikdash itself. There were other karbanos called kachem kalim, which means a lighter, a more lenient level of holiness, so they could be eaten in the whole city, but only within the walls of the old city of Yerushalayim. So, for example, if I take the karban, I say, you know what, I want to travel to, I don't know, Tveria, Tel Aviv, Tzvas. It's very nice, but you can't eat the meat anymore because something happened. It needed the energy of Yerushalayim. It's called nifsal b'yotzei. Okay, clear? So let's say the Karban Pesach. You have to come to Yerushalayim and eat it inside the walls. There was even something called Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni was 10% of people's grain that they would bring to Yerushalayim and eat. Or if there was a lot, you could exchange it on money and bring the money to Yerushalayim and buy the food there and eat it. It had to be eaten in Yerushalayim. I can't take it out. I'm not allowed to take it out. Again, it's a certain level of sanctity which would be compromised and it would be desecrated, violated, affected if it was taken out of Yerushalayim. That was the halacha when it came to the Beis HaMikdash. With Shiloh, it was different. With Shiloh, you can eat any carbon, any offering that was brought in Shiloh, you can eat as far as you want, as long as you could see the sanctuary in Shiloh. That means, even if I traveled to another city, maybe I traveled even far away, if it was a nice day in the Holy Land, and the fog did not eclipse your vision, let's say you went far, you went, I don't know, 50 miles away from Shiloh, the other side of Israel, and you went on a mountain, and it's a beautiful day, and you could see the Mishkan in Shiloh, or even a part of it, you're allowed to eat. You're allowed to eat any carbon. It did not have to be confined within the territory of that Mishkan, or even of that city of Shiloh. This was unique. That's what the Mishnah says in Tractate Zvachim, page 113. This was a huge difference between the system in Yerushalayim and the system in Shiloh. Again, in Yerushalayim, all karbanos had to be eaten either in the Beis HaMikdash or at best within the walls of the old city of Jerusalem. If not, they were disqualified if they were taken out. Couldn't just be brought back either. Why? Because this holiness must remain there. And if not, it gets affected. It's not for it. You have to know where it belongs, where it doesn't belong. In Shiloh, that quality did not exist. That halacha did not exist. You could be anywhere, anywhere literally, as long as your eyes can see it, you're good to go. Asks the Gemara, this is in Zvachim, why? Why the difference? And the Gemara brings this pasuk as the source. Because Shiloh was in the territory of Yosef. And what does Yaakov say about Yosef? He's charming to the eye. Ben Pyrus Alayayin. The girls in Egypt are all looking at him. And because Shiloh is his territory, and Yaakov said, it's charming to the eye. Everybody wants to see Yosef. So this is a halacha. He's actually teaching a law. That as long as you could see Yosef, meaning the Mishkan in his territory, the sanctuary in his territory, you're good to go. Yosef's influence pulls you in wherever you see him. So even if you're in another city, in another tribe, another territory, but you could see, you have a vision, your eyes can see part of the Mishkan of Shiloh, this is already, so to speak, lured in or consumed or included, submerged in Yosef's territory, and you can eat it. So practically speaking, I could take my carbon back home. I don't have to stay in Shiloh. Right? Anybody who brought an offering, you could bring the carbon back home as long as it's a good day and you have a vision and you could see any part of the Mishkan of Shiloh. But it seems that the search seems very far-fetched. I mean, Yaakov was talking about Yosef's beauty. That's all he was talking about. He wasn't talking about a Mishkan. He wasn't talking about Shiloh. He wasn't talking about eating karbanos. All he was talking about was Yosef's beauty. And suddenly Chazal see that as a source for an entire halacha that would be relevant much later, many years after Yosef's life. Once they go into Eretz Yisrael, it's hundreds of years after Yosef passed away. And also, what's the connection to the girls in Egypt looking at him? I mean, they were not eating karbanos. They were Egyptian women who heard that there's a new prime minister and there's a beautiful parade, and they went to see him. They heard all about him and they went to see it. In fact, according to one medrash, that's even how Yosef got his shidduch. The famous Rabbeinu Bechaya, that they threw gifts at Yosef. The girls were throwing gifts. And one of the girls there was Osnas. And Osnas, at least according to one tradition, was a daughter of Dina. And when Yosef saw the gift and it had in it engraved that she comes from the family of Yaakov, because Yaakov, before he sent her to Egypt, he wrote that. And Yosef searched out this young woman. And according to this medrash quoted Rabbeinu Bechaya, this is who he married. Osnas was really a relative of Yosef. So obviously the story has a lot of significance, but certainly they didn't go to eat karbanos there. Why does Yaakov then talk about this detail? Okay, in order to understand all of this, let's look at the next circuit. So it says in Miketz Perik Membeis, Vayakir Yosef es Echa Vahim Lo Yikiru. Yosef recognized his brothers and they didn't recognize him. Of course, this is in Egypt. They come down to get grain. They know who he is. He knows who they are. They don't know who he is. At the surface, it means it's been many years. It's been 20 years since they've been separated. Yosef was a young man. He was 17. Now he's much older. Rashi says he didn't have a beard then. Now he has a beard. So they don't recognize him. He does recognize them because they were already older than he. So therefore, they didn't change as much when he was separated. That's on a literal level. But yet there's a deeper question. Even if your brother grew a beard in the interim over these 20 years, there's other ways of recognizing people. What does it really mean? They did not recognize him at all. Nobody even had a suspicion that this is Yosef. So the Baal HaTanya, the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, gives a very, very profound interpretation to this pasuk and says, it's not just physical recognition. It rather captures one of the key distinctions between Yosef and his brothers, which explains so much of the challenge in the relationship. And in order to explain this, he points out another pasuk, which at the surface is also difficult to understand, and many mefarshim have different interpretations. But this opens up the vista to be able to understand the deeper dimension of Yosef. In Parshas Vayechi, after Yaakov passes away, he blesses the children, he passes away, they bury him in Maris HaMachpelah. The brothers are very afraid. They're afraid that now Yosef will take revenge. As long as his father was alive, he was respectful, he was graceful, he kept peace in the family. Now his father passed away, who knows what's going to emerge now. He has all the power. He's the boss, he's the prime minister of the most powerful country, he's right on the para, he could do whatever he wants to their families, and they're frightened. And that's the story in the next story, Vayechi Perik Nun, chapter 50. They're afraid that he's going to take revenge. And they come to him, and they send a message, sending a messenger to him, asking for forgiveness. And then you see, Vayelchu gamecha vayiplu lefonu vayemru hinenu lechal avadim. They come to him and they say, we will become your slaves. We will become your servants. Vayoyimer, the second paragraph. Vayoyimer aleim Yosef, al tiro, ki asachas Elohim ani. Yosef turns to them and says, don't be afraid. Am I under Hashem? Am I hatachas Elohim ani? Am I in the place of God or am I under God? You intended to harm me, but Hashem intended it for good in order to sustain many lives and the entire nation. Don't worry, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to sustain you. He comforted them and he spoke to their heart and everybody calmed down. What does he mean? Don't be afraid, am I under God? There's different interpretations. What does it mean? Is he saying, Hasachas Elikim Ani, it's not my job to punish, to penalize, I'm not God? Is it Hasachas Elikim Ani, as different Mefarshim say? It's interesting. Rashi says, do you think I'm God? Even if I want to harm you, you think I could? Look what you did. You tried to harm me, it didn't help. So Yosef was saying something very interesting. Look, learn from yourself and you'll see you tried to harm me. It didn't help, right? So let's say I want to try to harm you. What are you worried about? This is what Yosef is teaching his brothers, how to look at life. This is the Rashi's interpretation. The foreigner says, am I a judge? And am I going to punish a person or people that Hashem sent as shluchim to do a certain thing? You were his shluchim. I'm not going to get involved in this. The Arachayim says, if you're guilty, it's God's job to punish you. It's not mine. Different interpretations, but it's very interesting words. Yosef says, Hasachas Elikim Ani. Am I in place of God, or am I a substitute for Hashem, or am I under, literally tachas means under, am I under Hashem? But you see, these are ambiguous words. What exactly is he trying to say? There was a a major distinction between Yosef and his brothers. And this was one of the reasons they couldn't recognize him, not only physically, but they couldn't recognize who he was on a deeper level as well. And the meaning of this is, when the brothers come down to Mitzrayim, and Yosef goes to introduce them to Paro, he tells them, he's going to ask you what your job is, what your vocation is. Tell them that you're shepherds. And indeed, they come to the king and he says, what are you guys up to? What's your job? And they say, from the beginning of our lives, we were always Roye Tzayin. We were always shepherds. This was the thing we always did. And you see in the beginning of Ayeshev, this is what the Shvatim were doing. They were shepherds. In fact, the whole story with Yosef happened when they were shepherding the flock of Yaakov and Shechem. And Yosef went to visit them because Yaakov wanted to see how they're doing and how the sheep are doing and how the goats are doing and how all of the herds of flock are doing. So this was their vocation. It wasn't only them. Avram, we know, was a shepherd. Yitzchak was a shepherd. Yaakov was a shepherd. And all of the brothers were shepherds. Yosef was not. Yosef was not. Already in the house of Yaakov, he had other occupations. And already from his dreams, you saw that he had different dreams. And then, of course, once he ended up in Egypt, he was no shepherd at all. Why did the Shvatim choose the vocation of being shepherds? Why, from all different things you could be involved in, not even agriculture, not even farmers, they were shepherds. That's what they told Paro. Our entire life, we were Roye Tzayin. The reason, says the Baal HaTanya, is because this was a vocation, this is a job that allows a person to remain completely disconnected from the grind and the hustle and bustle and pressures and anxiety of the big world and of daily life. The Shvatim, like the Avos, for them, the priority, their soul, their key focus, not only their key, their sole focus in life was what you would call dveikus. Dveikus means attachment to the source of life, to the creator of life. It's so easy to get distracted. It's so easy to go out of that space. What does dveikus really mean? We have to understand for a moment what dveikus means, and I don't only mean intellectually, but more viscerally. Dveikus means that a person is in a space of intimacy with their soul and intimacy with the creator of the world. The vocation of being shepherds gave them that ability, that luxury to stay in that space because, first of all, it doesn't require tremendous physical labor and strain. Second of all, you're in a place of nature. Where do the flock graze? They need to pasture themselves. So you're in places of greenery and grass and rivers and streams. It's a place of seclusion. And over there, they could remain completely connected to their spiritual core and to the song that vibrates through the cosmos. They always wanted to remain in a place of intimacy with the divine without anything taking them out of that, separating them from that space. The space of serenity, the space of tranquility, the space of oneness, a space of infinite love, of sensing the koyach haboyre, sensing the koyach hapoyel benifel, the divine force cruising, flowing through creation with these innocent sheep and natural domesticated animals who are calm sometimes if they get their needs and serene and in a space of nature, the pristine world that Hashem made, that allowed them to retain that connection. Yosef had a completely different life. Already his dreams indicated a different vision. And then, when he was taken down to Mitzrayim, even as a slave, he was soon running Potiphar's entire house. Now, Potiphar was one of the most prominent ministers in Egypt. So he had many assets. He had large estates. He had a big house. He had a lot of properties that he owned. And Yosef was in charge on everything. He was not a secluded man anymore. He was not living on an island. He was not living in the world of nature, enjoying the music of creation. He was dealing with responsibilities on a daily level. And then he was thrown into prison. This was certainly no place of spiritual seclusion and isolation conducive for meditation, introspection, singing, and music. And then he becomes the prime minister of the superpower of the world, the economic superpower of the ancient world. Mitzrayim, ancient Egypt, was considered the most affluent, prosperous, and powerful nation. Pari was called a Meishel Bekippah, which means he basically was the most powerful person in the world at the time. And in terms of affluence, in terms of economy, in terms of culture, in terms of architecture, and in terms of military prowess, Egypt was considered the leading power of the ancient world. And Yosef was the one in charge. Pari said, nobody could move their legs or feet, their arms or legs in Mitzrayim without your permission. And he is right under the king. And he's in charge in everything. And the Pasuk says, V'Yosef hu ha-shalat, he was the ruler, hu ha-mashbir bar, he fed everybody. This is, wow, this is a different life. The Shvatim couldn't recognize Yosef. They couldn't recognize that such a person could be rooted in the entire core of what Jewishness represented for them. Because for them, for the Shvatim, who were lofty and great souls, what was really the legacy of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? The legacy of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov was not to get consumed, not to get lost, not to sell your soul to the superficial veneer of a world that is just a random physical place, and my focus is I need to do this and I need to do that and I need to survive and be comfortable, but rather to always remain in the space of a divine embrace, of divine love, to always remain in a place of spiritual oneness. But that takes tremendous amount of effort. It's a chaotic world. You're pulled in every direction. As shepherds, they can do that at least most of their day, probably all of their day, and that was life. That was life. And for them, this was bliss. Because all the bliss in the world, all the comforts in the world that people go after, very often they're distractions to numb the pain. Now I need this, now I need that, now I need it. What if I can actually connect to my deepest form of bliss? What if I could make my soul my best friend? When you make your soul your best friend, then you don't need, I don't need other distractions to be able to give me comfort. Because remember, the source of all bliss, the source of all joy, is the one who created all the joy and all the bliss. So you see that even the joys and the bliss in the physical world are so diverse and so powerful and often so tempting. If you go to the source of all that, the bliss is infinite. That's where the Shvatim wanted to live. That's where they lived. For them, therefore, Yosef, his entire approach, his entire perspective, was so contrary. They could not conceive that this young man could remain rooted in the same spiritual dvekus, in the same intimacy with the divine, like them. Yosef could recognize their avoda, heim lo yikiru. They couldn't recognize that this is a form of Yiddishkeit, that this could be part of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The entire vision did not make sense to them. So when now they're looking at this person in Egypt, they couldn't even imagine and entertain somebody who's running this economy so successful that really he's one of the Shvatim, he's a son of Yaakov, and he still remains in that space of intimacy and oneness. But the truth is, the Shvatim meant well, but it's because Heim Lo Yikiru, they didn't have a hasaga, they didn't understand Yosef's neshama, Yosef's soul. And this was the entire, one of the greatest chidushim, one of the greatest novel contributions that Yosef brought into the world and that Yosef gifted all the Jewish people for eternity with. And that's why when we want to look for the name of the Jewish people, when they need to be satisfied during times of hunger, we call them Yosef, Noya Katzan Yosef. What was Yosef's gift to the Jewish people? Yosef's soul came from a deeper place than his brothers. His brothers were great souls. In the language of Kabbalah, or Chassidus, the souls of the Shvatim came from what's called Olam HaBriya. Yosef's soul came from a world called Olam HaAtzilus, which means, in simple English, Yosef was so one with the source that he can be everywhere and still never detach from absolute dveikus in the Creator. Yosef could remain anchored in the source of infinity even while immersed in the most mundane aspects of life, to the point that he is running an entire country, and a country that is not a Jewish country, and it's a country of Mitzrayim, which as the Torah calls it, Ervas Haaretz. It was a place of moral depravity. So you would think he would be pulled down, he would be schlepped down. He remained completely, completely anchored in the source. How did he do it? What was Yosef's gift? So we see it in that story when he's in his home, in his master's home, and Potiphar's wife takes a liking to him. And every day the Torah says she nudges him and pleads with him and begs him and warns him and threatens him. Shichvimi, I want you to be with me in a promiscuous fashion. And Vayimon, Yosef refuses. And then the Torah says one day he comes home to do his work, Lasos Melachta, and the Targum Onkelos says, what type of work? L'mivdak b'kisvei d'chushbanei. He had to do bookkeeping and accounting. He was an accountant also. So he had to deal with numbers and math and checks and balances and intake and outtake and what came in and went out. He was in charge on all of the revenue and everything happening in Potiphar's house, to the point that the Torah says that Potiphar gave him over everything and didn't even know anything that's happening in the house. He wasn't interested. He delegated everything. He trusted Yosef blindly. Looks like Pare would trust Yosef blindly. You run this whole country. I'm just going to sit on the throne and drink my iced coffee. Or whatever else Pare did, I'm not sure. And that moment, Potiphar's wife remained home and she summons Yosef and she says, this is the day. And Chazal tell us, a famous Chazal in Maseches Sotah, and Rashi quoted one of the opinions, is that Yosef actually almost surrendered to her. And then he saw the image of Yaakov, his father, Dmuz de Yoikner Shal Yaakov, he saw the image of Yaakov, his father, and instead, Vayonas Vayetze HaChutzah, he escaped, he fled, and because she was holding his cloak, because she grabbed him by his cloak, Vatispeseyo Bevigdoi, she grabbed him by his cloak, and he ran out, the cloak, the garment tore, and she had this piece of evidence that it was the other way around, and that's how she cast him into prison, though he was completely innocent. Here is a classic example. Not only was Yosef immersed in a world that can be stressful and anxious, but actually he was in an environment where every single day he was tempted, where he was lured in by a very, very powerful, powerful voice outside of him that tried really to take him into the moral abyss. And at the last moment, he had that moment where it would seem like he would fall, and then the Musti Yoikner Shal Yaakov, he had an image of Yaakov, his father, in the window. What does this mean? What does this tell us about? What does this tell us about Yosef? Yosef's ability was, and it's similar, if we want to understand it, it's similar to when we talk about the fact that if we look at our own, let's apply it to our lives, what Yosef gives us, then we'll be able to bring it back to Yosef. The soul of a person, the soul is a chelek eleka. The soul, It's hard for us to relate to it sometimes because life becomes so filled with pressures and difficulties and challenges and also duties and responsibilities. So it's easy to silence. The soul essentially is purely divine. And its singular bliss in life is connection with the divine. And that's the source of all love. That's the source of all love, of all attachment, of all connection, of all clarity. What Yosef experiences in a very dramatic way, in many ways becomes the experience of every person. Each person in their own way. And this is what Yosef gifted us for eternity, and he gifted the Jewish people. What Yosef embodied and taught was that wherever I am in life, and whatever I'm dealing with in life, and Yosef is running an entire country, whether it's a to-do list that is very, very big, and as Jewish women, it gets bigger every single day. Or it is with internal stuff or external stuff, and they could often be challenging and causing anxiety. Yosef was so anchored in his core, which is the core of all life, he never ever stepped out of that. So even as his thoughts encompassed the whole Egypt, they never defined him. They never owned him. They never hijacked him. Now, let me explain. You know, If I'm doing something, right, or you're doing something, and suddenly you have a thought, you know that thought, maybe something I have to do soon, something that happened yesterday, some disappointing conversation I had, some text that overwhelmed me. Not the most blissful thought in the world, let's put it that way. A piece of news I just observed. What often happens? You know, the Baal Shem Tov said, you are where your thoughts are. So what happens is that thought literally takes me away from where I am. And now I'm on a different highway. It's like highways. You know, how many highways are there in front of you? As many thoughts there are in front of you. How many thoughts are we capable of thinking in 1 minute? Right? This is true even with men. They also have a lot of thoughts. Sometimes even more. It's not just a woman's challenge. But yeah, it's not hundreds, it's thousands. We sometimes don't even realize, right? If you're sitting at a shir and it's a little boring, what do? You start daydreaming, present company excluded. And suddenly you realize, oh wow, it's 5 minutes later, you just traveled half the world. And you dealt with each one of your children, and you even thought about your mother-in-law and your sisters-in-law and your brother-in-law, of course, your husband and yourself and this one and that one and that one, and your work and your students and the principal, the conversation you're supposed to have, you had a month ago, you had a year ago, you're going to have it a year from now. And every thought, boom, it literally hijacks me, and now I'm down that road. And suddenly, 10 minutes later, I'm stressed, I'm overwhelmed. Why? Because the machshavos really defined me. They took me onto that highway, and this is where I am. Now, how do I get off that highway? So you try to put on Waze, but the phone died. So you can't even get out. So now we're stuck and trying to get out. So you say, okay, let me make the best out of it. This was Yosef's koyach. He could be everywhere. His machshavas had to be. But he remained in one place. This thought came in. That thought came in. Now I have to deal with this. Now I have to deal with this. You see, sometimes a person can become detached. And sometimes that's what we do. There are people who do that. The anxiety of life, the pain of life is too intense. I emotionally unplug. I just unplug and then I'm safe. In neuroscience, there are different responses to difficult situations. One is fight and one is flight. One is fawn and one is freeze. All of these responses are different ways of coping, and one of them is flight. If I could just run onto a mountain physically or emotionally, if I don't feel so much, so then I'm safe. But that wasn't Yosef's chiddush. Yosef was fully embodied. He was fully present. How do we see this? Throughout the Tanakh, people cry, but nobody cries as many times as Yosef. In Chumash itself, there are 8 instances of Yosef weeping, as I mentioned last week. Very, very unique. 8 instances that the Torah describes to tell us how many times he cried. And if that's what it says in Torah, I can imagine how many times he actually cried. In other words, he was fully present. He was fully present to all the pain. He was fully present to every emotional interaction. He never had to detach. He didn't have to detach. You know why? Because he always can experience that part of himself, that core, that was in a divine embrace, that never left it. To give the example of the Baal HaTanya, another example, he says, think about the sun. When we look at the sun, we don't look at the sun itself, it's blinding, but we enjoy the rays of the sun. The rays of the sun come from the sun, and they bring us warmth, they bring us heat, they bring us light. A nice summer day, and yesterday we had a nice day. Today, not bad for December and January, end of December. We enjoy the sun, whether it's vitamin D, whether it's all the produce, all the vegetation, all the growth, all the heat, all the warmth, the light, the brightness. If you have sitting in your living room and the window is bringing in the light of the sun, or you're taking a stroll and a walk, we appreciate the rays of the sun very much. In fact, it's responsible for our survival. If the sun decides to set one night and not come back next morning, kaput. Besides the fact that there's no light, there's no growth anymore. There's no vegetation anymore. There's no rain anymore. I mean, that's why we thank Hashem for the sun every single day. Baruch atah Hashem, yoitzer hama'oiros. We're very, very grateful for the gift of the Ribbono Shel Olam through the sun, creating the sun and all of the luminaries. What about the ray of the sun going back to the solar core? In the solar core, you also have the ray of the sun. But the ray of the sun in the solar core doesn't have a separate reality because it's completely submerged in its source. Outside of the sun, the ray comes out and it has a significance. We can call it a ray. Inside the sun, you also have the ray. If you have the light outside of the sun, you have the light inside the sun. In fact, inside the sun, it's more powerful. But it's not separate. You don't look at the sun or go inside and say, hey, I see the ray inside the sun. It's submerged in the core, in the essence. Every creature, every creation is the ray. It's the ray of the sun. It's the ray. But in the physical example, the sun is not here on earth, thank God, because we would become toast. The sun remains there and the ray comes to the earth. In the metaphor that I'm talking about, the ray, which is every person's existence, is still inside the essence. We never ever leave the core of the sun. We're always in the core. So wherever I am, in my essence, everything, the entire world, still remains in the core of infinite reality in the embrace of Hashem. Now you say, very nice idea, but practically, this thought is coming at me, and this thought is nagging, and this thought is overwhelming, and this thought is creating fear. This was Yosef's ability. Yosef knew that in every situation, he doesn't have to figure it out mathematically in order to control it. His core remained in the core of the sun, and he knew wherever he is, my ray stays in the core. It did not detach itself. It had never disconnected itself. And now, when his thoughts took him somewhere, they never took him there. They never hijacked him. Rather, he understood now is the time for me to focus on whatever I have to focus in order to bring the light to wherever I have to bring the light. Now, it's important to acknowledge how difficult this can be. Because if somebody is having a very disturbing thought, if somebody is going through something, to disvalidate it and just say, you know, you're in the core of Hashem and everything is blissful and good and powerful, it's authentic. But it could become inauthentic when the person tries to repress or deny what's going on in my body. I'm nervous. My nervous system is insane. I'm overwhelmed. I'm anxious. This is difficult. I'm feeling resentment. I'm feeling like a failure. I'm feeling fear. I'm feeling guilt. But can I watch that from the core? In other words, can I look at that and rather than be pulled into that, look at it with your core remaining in the core, in the solar core, your core remaining anchored in the one exclusive source of all reality. So now I can actually look at this experience, feel it, appreciate whatever I'm going through, but not lose it. Not get swept away by the waves. It's almost like they'll teach a good lifeguard. You're going in to save somebody who needs help in the ocean. One of the dangerous things is you'll get swept away with the victim. And then not only can't I save you, Chas v'Shalom is the other way around. So it's the great talent of going there. I have to go when I can't sit on the throne and say, hey, get out of the ocean and don't go swimming here next time. I have to jump in. But I am anchored in such a powerful space, not to get pulled in, but rather I can pull others in. That's true within ourselves. Within myself, there are waves, there are undercurrents that want to schlep me and take me away at any moment. Maybe it could be a comment that your child tells you. Maybe it's a crisis. Maybe it's a very painful piece of news. Maybe it's an inner emotion that you're dealing with. Maybe it's fear, maybe it's the anxiety, maybe it's the stress, it's the responsibility, whatever that issue may be. And what happens is I can allow it to take me over and suddenly I am myself in a whirlwind of chaos or in a whirlwind of fear. What was Yosef HaTzadik's power? Yosef HaTzadik's power was he could be in the house of Potiphar as a slave in Egypt. He had a place of safety and security. This is what his father gave him. What does it mean? He saw the image of his father. He didn't know what his father looked like. Remember, it says, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef. Yosef looked like Yaakov. So when it says he saw the image of his father, whose image did he really see? His own. He saw his own image. He had an image of himself that was a reflection of Yaakov. The Muzdi Yoikner Shal Yaakov, and he looked like Yaakov. So he saw his own image, but he saw his own image absorbed in Yaakov. He saw his own image from a place of that safety and security. That's why the anchor is the key. If a person never experienced their soul, if my soul is not my best friend, then I'm looking for everything around me to make me feel safe, to make me feel good. So if I'm having a positive moment, I'm great. And if something is negative, boom, I'm done. Yosef was never defined by the outside. He was completely, completely defined by the inside. He was completely defined by his core. He saw himself always in the core of the sun. In the core of the sun, the ray is never separate. The ray doesn't even have a separate identity. It doesn't even have its own distinctness. Not because it's not powerful, it's more powerful. But it's simply part of that oneness. And yet, Yosef is all over the place, you would think. Yosef is thrown into places where his brother is never thrown into. But what happens with Yosef? Yosef never ever steps away from that. So in a person's life, it would mean, practically speaking, let's say something happens in your house, something happens in your job, something happens in your life, whatever it may be, benign or more serious, but in terms of reactions, a person finds themselves, I find myself, or you find yourself reacting, being pulled here, pulled there. And the great danger is, the thoughts are right away going to schlep me in, and 5 minutes later I can't even recognize myself. This trigger really, really captured my soul, captured my head. This is what the Shvatim said. Stay away from these thoughts. Stay near the water. Stay near the grass. Stay with the sheep. So you won't get triggered by anything of the world. You'll remain in a place of tainug, in a place of bliss, in a place of dveikus. You'll remain in a place of your soul. But Yaakov knew, God knew, Yosef knew, that history is going to take us to many different places. We won't always have that ability, like the Shvatim, to be able to remain shepherds in beautiful landscapes, sitting near the water and singing all day. Singing poetry to our souls and to the Creator, and remaining in that place of silence and oneness and meditation, which is really an extraordinary space of fulfillment. Because what do you think the neshama does in Gan Eden? The others are in Gan Eden for thousands of years. Are they bored? They don't have WhatsApp. Was tun ze ganze tag? What do they do? There's not even meals to look forward. We're going out to eat. They're not going out to eat. But the truth is, it's a pretty amateur question I'm asking, because all the pleasures pale in comparison to the source of bliss. In the soul, there is infinite bliss. It's called Ahava B'Tanugim. L'saneg al Hashem. That dveikus, that intimacy, we all know in moments of love, of real attachment, of real safety, there is an absolute bliss that comes with connection. And the source of all connection is our connection with Hashem. Hashem is the source of love. It's the source of compassion. All ecstasy comes from there. All bliss comes from there. That's where they wanted to be, and that's where they were. Yosef, you're going into places where you're going to be triggered, not every 10 minutes, every millisecond you're going to be triggered. What's going to be left of you? Vayakir Yosef Esechov. Yosef could recognize his brothers. Vahem lo yikiru. They could not recognize. How could you have a Jew running the Egyptian economy and still with the same level of dveikus? Not because he was lower than them. His soul came from a higher place. His soul came from such a place of oneness that even in the lowest, lowest circumstances, his dveikus remained untarnished, unaffected. Completely. He could run an economy. He can deal with everybody from Potiphar to the wife of Potiphar, from Pharaoh, people often who were immoral and corrupt. But he, his soul, was so connected. He never stepped out of that. Imagine that image. He never stepped out of the solar core. He never did. But what do you mean? I have to deal with this. I have to deal. Yeah, my thought has, just like Hashem knows the whole world. Hashem sees the whole world. Hashem thinks the whole world. So the Baal HaTanya says, maybe you should say Hashem is the one who has the most machshava zaris in the world. He has to deal with all my thoughts, all your thoughts, everybody's thoughts. Imagine how many machshava zaris God has. We all try to stay away from machshava zaris. Who has the most? Hashem knows everyone's thoughts. The answer is, it's not defined by it. It's not defined by it. Hakal niskarim b'skir achas, like we say Rosh Hashanah. Yosef HaTzadik, he had to deal with the world, and he had to deal in a very real way. And he connected and he understood, but he was never consumed or defined by it. Why? Because it was his journey, his avoida now, to bring light, to bring awareness, to bring truth into this place with a lot of compassion, a lot of sensitivity, and a lot of inner strength and firmness. I think willpower is critical, but willpower here on its own is not enough. because willpower could make me do something that I don't want to do. Willpower will never give me an experience of bliss and joy. You understand? Will works with power. As you said, willpower. This can't just be with power. This has to be with an inner sense of connection and compassion. The dveikus, that was the gift. The gift was that he could always remain in a place of safety where he could feel God's infinite love to him, literally embracing him like an infant who may have got a boo-boo, but he's in the embrace of a mother and feels seen, soothed, safe, secure. The four S's, which is what creates the S of shalom, of peace, wholeness. And that embrace was always there. So now, yeah, I may be dealing with a crisis here. I may be dealing with pressure, and I have to figure it out, and I have to know what to do. Yosef was a very proactive man. He was no passive pushover at all. He initiated project after project. Remember, he's the one who made a whole vision for Egypt. This was not a passive person who says, oh, God runs the world, I'm going to sit on the couch and go to sleep. It's not his philosophy. On the contrary, he's a more powerful person. You know why? Because when the ray is in the core, it's actually much more intense. It's much more powerful. There's much more electricity. When the ray is in the core, it actually has much more power, much more. But it's not separate. It's not separate. Never disengage. Didn't have to disengage. For the Shvatim, if you want to be in Dveikus, you have to disengage. It's very normal. Yosef didn't have to disengage. He could be completely engaged, manifested, embodied, and remain connected. And in a person's individual life, it means I may be experiencing something, and that experience doesn't agree with this whole shiur. You all know you could finish this shiur, and you'll go out and you'll get a text, and boom! It's all nice. I'm in no core, and nobody loves me, and nobody's embracing me. This world is not a safe place, so I'm a shiggin' of out. And it's going to happen 5 minutes after this class. In fact, you may have been getting the text right now. Just you're not looking at it now, which is a mila.
It's accessible for all of us if we do the work.
So this was Yosef's gift. Yosef was a gift. That's why we're all named by the name of Yosef. Because we have moments of hunger. Because it's not like these thoughts are not going to come. I live in a world and I live in a, my nervous system may have not listened to the shiur. And even if the nervous system did listen, the nervous system may say, good philosophy. Let's wait till the next trigger. Okay, you're making Shabbos? Who? The nervous system says, oh, you're shiurim, I'm making Shabbos? Everybody, why are you doing Shabbos? And the Shabbat Barachas and the Bar Mitzvah? And the cleaning lady didn't show up because it's New Year's? For a whole week? So go tell him. Go tell him to, instead of giving the shiur, let him come clean my house. If you pay well, maybe.
Do you get credit for having this gift? Or is it something that affiliates?
Like everything, he has a gift, but without cultivating it and developing it and working on it, it doesn't happen. Yosef worked harder than most people. He worked very hard. All great people, they have gifts, but they do a lot of work. From Adam Arishin to Avram Avinu to Moshe Rabbeinu to Yosef HaTzadik. On the contrary, they work harder than most people. It's not like they don't work hard. They have gifts, no question. When Yaakov gives Yosef a ksoinus pasim, a multicolorful coat or tunic, it wasn't just, you know, he found a beautiful sweater in Macy's and he bought it and they all got jealous. So why don't you go to Century 21? There are sales now. Get yourself a cashmere sweater. Was willst du? Because of a sweater and a coat, so we're going to hate our brother. The ksoinus pasim, the multicolorful tunic, was a spiritual gift, not just a physical gift. Yosef is going to come into a world that's going to be multicolorful, diverse. Diversity can easily destroy a person. I want to be in oneness. The neshama wants to be in achdos, in oneness. Diversity can schlep me in 1,000 directions. I'm running here and I'm running there and I'm running there. I don't even know who I am anymore. That's why you have to be very careful with diversity. Look what happened in American universities became all about diversity to the point you don't know the difference between Hitler and Churchill. There's no difference between Jewish children and Hamas. It's all the same. Diversity. Diversity can become the greatest curse because it's not anchored in oneness. The ksoinus pasim, the multicolorful tunic, was a gift that Yosef can navigate a world filled with paradoxes and remain anchored. And that's why he is the master of dreams. Ben Pyrus, come back to the word Pyrus. The word Pyrus has different combinations. Pyrus means charming. Pyrus also is the same letters like the word Poiser. What does Poiser mean? an interpreter of dreams. Paiser chalaimus. It also is the same letters like the word toifer. Remember what toifer is? Sewing. What's the connection? What's the connection of Yosef's charm to Yosef interpreting dreams? Paiser to Yosef sewing. And the answer, of course, is what are dreams? Everybody knows the worst thing you can do to a dream is try to make sense out of it. In a dream, one moment I'm alive, the next moment I'm not. One moment I'm in Spain, the next moment I'm in America, and the same time I'm in Australia. And it all makes sense until you wake up. Dreams, by definition, are rattled with enigma and paradox, and that's why they give a key to deeper things. Yosef is the master of dreams. Bala Chalem is Paisa Chalem. What does he do? He's not afraid of paradox. That's the Ksainus Pasim, the multicolorful paradoxical tunic. Yosef can go to different extremes because he's rooted in the source that contains all the paradoxes. The Shvatim, the Alter Rebbe, the Baal Tanya says these very rituals, as the Shvatim made a mistake, they called him Bala Chalaimus. They thought he was the dream. They didn't realize he was the interpreter of dreams. When you are the dream, it means you're just an inconsistent person, a lunatic. You know why lunatics are called lunatics? Because they follow the lunar cycle. And the moon is a very, very complex creature. It doesn't look like he knows where he's going. We follow our moon, our Rosh Chodesh, our months are based on the moon. We have a shtika lunacy in us. And like the moon, we wax and we wane and we grow and we diminish and then we disappear. Bechlal. 2 days you don't show up. You quit. And then you think the world is over, life is over. You come back. It's very easy to get world. Yosef, they call him the Bala Chalaimus. He's the Paiser Chalaimus. He's the Teufer. He has the thread that can sew things. What does a Teufer mean? Tfira. When you connect things that become separate because they really belong together. So the button fell off, but I'm going to bring the button back to the jacket. That's what Teufer is. And that's why Pyrus is also from the word Piria, Pru, Revu, multiply. Yosef multiplies. V'yidgul arayv. Because all of the expressions of the ray don't phase him because he's always connected to that core. And because he's connected to that core, so therefore what happens is, Yosef HaTzadik, in our life, is that person, right now you may say something, or I may see something, or I may hear something, yeah, and I'm triggered, and I'm overwhelmed. And yeah, my thoughts are going to a different place. And you know what? I want to respond from that place. What will Yosef say? This was the wife of Potiphar, who's just, you know, whatever that means in a person's life, whatever that means, every person in their own way. Yosef says, right now, can you feel the safety of your soul? Can you feel the fact that a part of you is never disconnected? A part of you doesn't need anybody's validation. A part of you is completely whole and rooted in infinity, and nothing can take that away from you and from the world. Because that is the truth. Yeah, I know a part of me is not feeling that. And that's a part, and that's fine. That's fine. That's why my soul came in. That's why Yosef went into Mitzrayim. We come down into these places. So instead of me getting schlepped away, can I bring compassion to that thought, to that experience? Maybe at the moment I can't. I don't have time. I say, you know what? I'm going to come back to revisit you. Maybe I could shed light on it. And slowly give it the compassion I need and realize what I have to process and what I have to work through, which is fine and normal. But I remained anchored, and therefore I don't say things or do things that later I'm going to regret. Why? Because I did not step away from the ultimate truth. But I could only do that if I have an experience of that ultimate truth. I can do this, I'm going to say it again, only with willpower. And this is important to understand. Willpower is very important, especially for discipline, right? Especially for maintaining certain schedules that are not always comfortable. Like some people, for them to do their exercise, they need a lot of willpower. It's not geschmack. They're not going to regret it, but to get it, they need willpower. But in terms of true healing and transformation, it must be not only will, but also pleasure. There's Ratzon, and above Ratzon there's Tainug. Will, and deeper than will, is pleasure. You know why? Because bliss is what transforms people, not will. Will, I could say, this is what I want, this is what we're going to do. I don't want to clean the kitchen, I'll do it anyway. Fine. I don't want to make the call, I'll do it anyway. I don't want to exercise, I'll do it anyway. I'm not in the mood of taking this call, but I am. No, I'm not in the mood, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Your teenage child needs to talk to you. It's 2 a.m. You need at least 10 minutes of sleep. All the fibers in your being are saying no. But yet, a person may say, this is the right thing to do. This is what I'm going to do right now. And willpower helps for that. But real connection happens when I can experience the tainug. We need to experience the pleasure, the bliss. What's pleasure? Being your soul's, making your soul your best friend. Because your soul has that bliss. Your soul, the soul has that tainug. The soul has that connection. And all real love in the world is rooted in that tainug, in that bliss. What's going to happen with love for my wife and love for my children and love for my friends and love for my family? It's love God with all your heart. So if my whole heart loves God, so I hate everybody else? The answer is the opposite. When you love Hashem with all your heart, then you love everybody else. Because all real love is an expression of that love. What does it mean I love Hashem? What do I love? It's loving everything good, everything blissful. It's loving the source of all goodness, of all life. So that I love in every, that I love in all my loved ones. And ultimately, the extension is to every person. So therefore, as a result of this, Yosef HaTzadik is the Paiser, and he is the Teufer, and he is the Pyrus. That's what Yaakov says. So now, let's go back and bring it full circle. The Beis HaMikdash is in the section of Yehuda. The Mishkan is in the section of Shiloh. You remember the law. What's the halacha by the Beis HaMikdash? You can only eat it in the walls. What's the halacha by Shiloh? You can eat it everywhere, as long as you can see. Why? So the Gemara says it's because of Yosef. And the story with Potiphar, what's the connection? Now the connection is very obvious. There's 2 ways of understanding what Yiddishkeit is. One vision of Yiddishkeit is you can be holy, but only inside the wall. As Trump said, you got to build a wall. But Reagan, you remember when Reagan told Gorbachev, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. Talking about Berlin. Tear down that wall. Well, Judaism also has these 2 approaches. You can eat karbanos inside the wall. Build a wall. You have to have a wall. You have to have a chayma. Chayma zutayra. Chayma means, also spiritually speaking. Spiritually speaking means I have a wall. Inside this wall, holiness blossoms. That's Yehuda's vision. That's the brother's vision. That's why they can't understand Yosef. You're endangering the whole vision of Yiddishkeit. What's Yosef's great chiddush? The most important thing you need is vision. Yosef didn't live in a wall. Yosef lived in places that were furthest away from holiness. But he remained connected because he saw the image. He had vision, he had eyes. So what type of Mishkan did he create? Wherever you are, you can eat the karbanis, you could connect to Kedusha as long as your eyes, you can open your eyes and have a vision. Behold the vision of the epicenter of holiness. Behold the vision of your soul rooted and anchored in the infinite presence of Hashem. You can eat the karbanos even though you're very, very far away. He was very far away. Okay, very well said. Very well said. The doctor is explaining that this is the vision of Lubavitch to bring Yiddishkeit to the whole world. It's based on Yosef's vision. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. The truth is, every day, it's Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim, like everything in holiness, you're not dealing with a real contradiction. And that's why when we wake up in the morning, the first words we say are Moida ani. Moida sounds like which name? Yehuda or Yosef? Moida. Yehuda. When we start davening, the first words of davening, at least in Nusach Sfarad, is Hoidu Lashem, Yehuda. Because the only way I can be successful as Yosef is if I start off my day as Yehuda. If I start off my day everywhere in the world, I'm nowhere. I'm scattered. I'm overwhelmed. It's like people who wake up, the first thing, I take my phone. I'm busy with emails and WhatsApps and texts. 2 hours later, you were just slept into, right? 100 different news items, 20 different clips. Some made you cry, some made you laugh, some made you angry, some made you overwhelmed, some made you overjoyed if it was my clip, hopefully. But the bottom line is, with all due respect to myself or anybody else, it's not how you start a day. It's impossible. Because there's no self. There's no self that's anchored. But we always have to start the day in Yerushalayim. In the walls of Yerushalayim. That's why the Gemara says, right, the person does in the morning is to daven. Why? I have to connect. A person must be connected. I have to be anchored in the self, in the core of divinity, that then will allow me to be able to remain anchored wherever I have to go throughout the day. Because the day will take me to very interesting places. Hopefully not as dramatic as Yosef. But every person in their own way. My head is going to go to a lot of places. When I start off with Yehuda, I can then continue with Yosef. So the two sanctuaries, the two Beis Hamikdashes, the Mishkan of Shili and Yehuda, both represent very, very fundamental things. And for the Shvatim, they were right. They taka couldn't do what Yosef did. It would take them away. That's why they couldn't understand. They thought this whole vision of Yosef is a threat to Judaism. But for Yosef, this was not just his journey. This was his gift to the Jewish people. And that's why at the end, they all acknowledge Yosef's greatness. And this is the meaning of Yosef's words, Hatsachas Elohim Oni. It's an incredibly moving idea of the Alter Rebbe of the Baal HaTanya. Yosef tells to the brothers, you know what your mistake is? You think I'm under Elohim. You think I'm under, I'm hasachas, hatachas, I'm under Elohim. I'm lower than Elohim. What is Elohim? The name Elohim, Aleph, Lamed, Hey, Yud, Mem, is the numerology of 86. It's the same numerology as the word hateva, nature, the nature. Why? Because Shem Elohim represents Midas Hatzimtzum. It represents the way the solar core is concealed in our world. Everyone is on their own. As we say, I'm a shikavelt. Now I'm just trying to survive. That's what Elohim does. Elohim does, I could look at the sun and see the solar core. But here I don't see a sun. At best, I have the ray of the sun. And if it's a dark day, I don't even have that either. It's cloudy and it's rainy. So Elohim is the fact that Hashem's infinite oneness is concealed in what we call nature. Hateva. Says Yosef, Hatachas Elohim Ani. You think I'm under Elohim. I'm above Elohim. Yosef's soul was rooted in Havaya. Yosef's soul was rooted in a consciousness that's above Elohim, so he could be everywhere and never be affected by concealment. If I would be under, you are under Elohim. Your souls come from a place under Elohim. So yeah, you had to be shepherds. You had to be shepherds, Chevra. That's why you couldn't understand me. This is where he's spilling the beans. I'm not tachas Elohim. My neshama is rooted in such clarity that I can go to all places and there's no concealment. By Yosef, there's no concealment. There's no disparity. There's no fragmentation. Toifer. Everything is one. He's not rattled by paradox. You understand? He's not tachas Elohim. He's higher than the consciousness kevayochel of Elohim. And therefore, even in places where other people say, this is concealing. This is going to schlep me away. This is going to overwhelm me. Yosef is rooted in that space of clear oneness. And because he's anchored there, no thought in the world, even if it's overwhelming, and there's a lot going on, both in terms of his personal tragedy and his responsibilities. He remained a Merkava. He remained completely, completely Davuk, completely connected. Completely. And this was what's so astounding. They thought he's going to take revenge. They destroyed his life. Yosef said, first of all, you can't destroy my life. I'm not under Elohim. I'm above Elohim. But now I'm explaining to you what you didn't understand. And therefore, don't worry. I'm not in this job of taking revenge. I don't have to take revenge because you never took away my power. People feel they have to take revenge if somebody stole my power. Why can't I forgive? I can't forgive because in my mind, if I forgive, I'm going to let go of all the pain you caused me. So it's hard. It's very hard. And we have to be compassionate towards that. If somebody hurt me and I forgive, what does it really mean? It means I'm letting go. In a way, not forgiving means I'm still holding on to the pain, and therefore I have a witness that tells me that I was pained. Forgiveness is not something I could just snap my fingers. But what Yosef is teaching us is, when I can really go to that solar core, when I realize I was always there, So then, you know what? You didn't destroy me. You couldn't. I thought you did, but you didn't. So I'm letting it go. You know why I'm forgiving? I'm not only forgiving for you, I'm forgiving for me too. Because when I forgive, it really means you don't have any control over me, so why should I not forgive? Not forgiving means you're still working insanity in my system. You understand what I'm saying? Not forgiving means you're still creating chaos inside of me. You still control my life. I'm still busy with you. Yosef said, I'm not under Elikim. Hasachas Elikim. Now, I don't want you to think after this class, you could just snap your finger and be there. This takes avoida. This takes avoida. Again, if I'm not connected to the bliss of my soul, then the forgiveness is probably going to be done only because I'm forced to forgive, because I feel guilty. It's Erev Yom Kippur, and my mother called me and said, you have to forgive. And if not, you're going to get punished. Then I'm not really forgiving. I'm just scared of my mother. I don't mean my mother. I mean whoever that person's voice inside of you. It could be the mother is inside of you. Forgiveness is a very deep emotional place. Forgiveness is not just I say I forgive. So this is what Yosef is explaining to them. So now, how does it come together? Let's see. Now we'll understand the girls of Egypt looking at Yosef. When Yaakov wants to bring out this power of Yosef, what does he say? You were enthralled. People were enthralled by you. Their eyes were attracted to you. Ben Pyrus Alei Oyin. Whoever sees you was affected by you. This was Yosef's uniqueness. This is what saved Yosef himself. His eyes. And therefore he could take away his eyes from the wife of Potiphar. Focus his eyes on Yaakov, his father. He knew where his eyes belong and where his eyes don't belong. And therefore his eyes had much more power. Because what did belong to his eyes, he can have fully. But what Yosef helps a person understand is, as long as you can see with your eyes a vision of Yosef, wherever I am, I still have the Kedusha of the Mishkan Shilai, I still have the sanctity of Shilai. Even the women in Mitzrayim, what do they have with Yosef? Even they were affected by Yosef. But here it goes, and here we come to the last step in this picture. And this is a gewaldike insight from the Rogachover Gon to the last source, Tzofnes Paneach Vayichi, Bonoi Saada Alei Shur Kvar Kasafti Baza, Kivan De Noshim Einam Chayavim Biriyye Rak Besimcha, Ve'im Kein Dai Sheyoichel Kotshim Begvulin, De Nechal Bechol Aroya De Shiloi, Ve'ein Tzorich Leilich Leregel HaMishkan, Ve'zeo Tzada Alei Achayma Sheyoichel Kotshim Bechol Aroya. This is pretty powerful. Women don't have the chiyuv of aliyah l'regel, of going Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos to the Beis HaMikdash. It says Yiroa called Schurcha. It's a mitzvah essay, Shazman Grama. Especially you have a mother with children, babies, you don't have to make, you can't, Hakel, everybody came. That was once in 7 years. Every 8th year. But every Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, it was a mitzvah on the older males who can walk. Yiroa called Schurcha, El Pnei Adin Hashem. Not on the women, but women had a different mitzvah. It's called V'samachta B'chagecha. To be joyous on the holidays. In time of the Beis HaMikdash, part of that joy was eating the karbonas. So they came to Yerushalayim, but they didn't have to climb up the Harabayas unless they wanted to go to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Tif, which was a chiyuv on the males. They could stay in a comfortable villa in Yerushalayim. It was pretty packed in the old city, or wherever they were, and then they can eat the karbonas there. Says the Rakat Shavar, that's why Yaakov spoke about the girls. Why? Because this is really a story of what's going to happen with Yosef. When you come to the Mishkan of Shiloh, the men anyway have to go to the Mishkan, because they have a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel, they have to go to the Mishkan. But the women, they don't have to actually go to the Mishkan, but they have to eat karbonis. So they don't even have to get close, as long as they can see it, they're good. So that's why when the girls are looking at Yosef, it's a foretaste of what's going to happen in Halacha. The men anyway have to go to Shiloh. It's not enough that they see Shiloh from far, because they have a mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. But the girls and the women, they just have to eat the karbonis on Yom Tov. So when they see Yosef, that's enough. I see Yosef and I'm in. I'm already connected. Wherever they are, they can look at the Mishkan of Shiloh and they can eat the karbonas. And it really represents also a deeper dimension of why Yaakov mentions the girls of Ibonoi Saad Aleishur. Because you see, practically speaking, in Yiddishkeit, you see that when you talk about, you know, you talk about genders or different mitzvahs that people have, so men have a mitzvah. They have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah constantly. Whenever they have a moment to learn. And all the mitzvahs, Shazman Grama, whether it's tefillin, or tzitzis, Shachris Mincha Maariv. All these mitzvahs are a chiyuv, all mitzvahs of time. It's a chiyuv on the man. The woman, if she wants, she can do it, a gevaldika thing, but there's absolutely no obligation. What's the reason for this? One of the reasons, this is what Yaakov is expressing. Generally speaking, there's two ways in which a person accesses God's holiness in this world. One is Yehud and one is Yosef. One is by actually going into a wall, going into seclusion. And one is by revealing godliness in the physical world. You have, for example, a yarmulke. What's a yarmulke? A yarmulke stands two words. Yorei Mekel. Yorei Mekel. Yiris Hashem. Above my head, there's the presence of the Shekhinah. No, so women don't need a yarmulke. Okay, I know they have a sheitel. And before that, the idea is the yarmulke means Hashem is above me. Hashem is above me. The unique power of femininity is he's not only above, he's inside. That's the idea of an aliyah. Why do men get an aliyah, women don't get an aliyah? So I know most people probably here are not grieving that. You're not busy craving your whole life to put on tefillin and get an aliyah and daven on the other side of the kaisel. What's a pshat an aliyah? The word aliyah means elevation. Why am I being elevated? I'm being elevated to the Torah. That's a gevaldik inyan. But then there's something even deeper. And that is to find out that where you are is already an elevated space. So it's not the yarmulke is above me. The yarmulke is inside of me. It speaks from me, through me. So Yaakov says the chiddush of Yosef is bonos tzad aleishur. We see by the Mishkan that the women gave their mirrors. And that became the kir. The kir, the washing basin, was made from their mirrors. So Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, that Moshe didn't want to accept the mirrors. Why? Because these mirrors were used in Mitzrayim for the women to decorate themselves, to be able to motivate their husbands who were completely oppressed and completely depleted from all energy. So Moshe said, it's a pasnisht. Elu asuyin li yetzahara, it's a pasnisht. This is more for base things. So what did Hashem say? Elu chavivin alay min akoil. This is more precious than any other donation to the Mishkan. This is what created the Jewish army. What was it? It was machlokes between Moshe and Hashem. Moshe was looking at it from the perspective of transcendent holiness. So what now? Was talking about bringing in mirrors from people's bedrooms into the Mishkan. Hashem says, you don't get it. Elu chavivin alay min akoil. This is the vision of Yosef. The vision of Yosef was Yefei Torah, Yefei Mara. But his whole beauty was a manifestation of Hashem in this world. There was no separation. So dafka these mirrors, which created the intimacy and the future of the Jewish children in Mitzrayim, this is what the Mishkan needs. And it became the kir. What's the kir? The kir was used to cleanse their hands and feet, which made the Kayanim pure. You would think, okay, you want to use the mirrors, fine, put them in some museum. The kir is where the Kayanim would wash their arms and legs every morning to be cleansed. So they're using mirrors to cleanse, but the thoughts here are like sometimes be disturbing. But that's only if you don't understand the Nakuda. The real Nakuda is that this was the ultimate Kedusha. Because the ultimate holiness is not the holiness that I find when I separate myself, which is great, and I need that. But it's the holiness that I find within relationships, within connection. Within my kitchen, within my living room, within my bedroom, like Yosef HaTzadik, Bonai Sa'ad Aleishur. It was the young women who grasped this ability that wherever you are in the world, I don't need only an aliyah to go to another place to find Hashem. Right here, right now, even when it looks like physical or mundane responsibilities, this is the epitome of holiness. This is the embodiment of holiness. And that's why Bana Sa'ad Aleishur, they didn't necessarily have to go to the Mishkan itself, but they had to see it. And when they saw it, that allowed them to remain connected. So now, when Yaakov says this to Yosef at the end of his life, he's really capturing the key power of Yosef. So right away he says, Vayimaru, they made him bitter. Vayroibu, they fought with him. Vayistamu, Balei Chitzim. In the first passage, Balei Chitzim means archers, but the word Chitzim also is connected to the word mechitza. It's also connected to the word chatzi, half. Mechitza, balei chitzim. Those who believe that you have to have a mechitza, you have to have a wall, they didn't like Yosef because he went out of the wall. He went into Egypt. He had a vision that was so different, they couldn't deal with it. Balei chitzim. But what was the mistake? Things were chatzi. There's half and there's half. There's split. The power of Yosef was toifer, poiser, power of unity. So therefore, he's no split. He's not split half and half. He has a ksoinis pasim. So the Mishkan was in Shiloh. Then the Beis HaMikdash went to Yerushalayim after that. And there's a chayma. There's a chayma. Jews couldn't live without a chayma. Because when you don't have a wall, it's very easy to get lost. When it says when Mashiach comes, the Navi Zechariah says about Yerushalayim, Prozois Teshev Yerushalayim. What does that mean? Yerushalayim will sit opened up, unwalled. Unwalled. Why? This is where the Yehuda and Yosef come together. Like the Navi Yecheskel says in the Haftarah Vayigash, that the split of Yehuda and Yosef will cease and they'll become one stick, the Navi Yecheskel says. So Yerushalayim will be open. Because since V'nigla Kvod Hashem V'rochal Basar, the presence of Hashem will be revealed in the entire cosmos. So then the wall that was so necessary can be opened up. Because the unity will be completely manifested. The unity that Yosef always experienced, that we got a taste of Shiloh, will be manifested literally in the whole world. So therefore Yerushalayim could be completely open. May we see it very speedily in our days now and have a wonderful and blessed week. Next week there's a class, Be'ezer Hashem Bli Nadar.
This class is brought to you by the yeshiva.net. Please help us continue the classes. Make even a small contribution at www.theyeshiva.net/donate.